Yes, I believe we are live. Yes, we're coming to you live from the mothership.
Satellite feed.
Here in Redmond, Washington, from Microsoft headquarters for Tech Days Online, UK edition. I'm Rick Claus, and I'm joined by Jeffrey Snover. Nice to see you, sir.
Good to see you.
we decided to do something a little bit different and have kind of a view from what's going to be coming in the future.
Yeah, well, actually, I thought I'd give the whole server narrative.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's a pretty exciting story. So this is our server journey.
Okay.
And we talk about how basically three consulting engineers from DAC kind of made this happen.
That sounds and, great.
Yeah, so part of this is I just have unbridled optimism right now about server and where we're going, you know, what we have and what's coming next. There's that great phrase, the future's so bright you gotta wear shades. That's what this is about. You gotta wear shades to see the future of Windows Server because it's just crazy exciting. So first of all, I thought I'd start with the topic about, you recognize this guy? Ken Olson. Ken founded Digital Equipment Corporation. Mm-hmm. And if you're not familiar with it, there's this amazing interconnection between the histories of Microsoft and digital. In fact, many of the senior technical talent at Microsoft had come from digital. Digital was a place that was renowned for its engineering culture and just top-notch engineers. Anyway, so I thought I'd talk about the engineers that came here. So the first, of course, was Dave Cutler. Mm-hmm. Dave is world-renowned, okay? You know, just widely respected by every engineer that hasn't had Dave come to his office and punch a hole through his wall for breaking the build. And even those guys like Dave. I mean, he's just an engineer's engineer, just incredible guy. Now, he came, Bill Gates hired him, and he came to Microsoft and he said, we need a better OS. This Windows 3.1 thing, that's not an OS. I mean, it might be commercially successful, but that's not an OS. And so Dave, and he brought a fantastic group of engineers with him, Lou Perizzoli, John Parcham, Daryl Haven, just rock star engineers, and they produced the kernel and the core of what became Windows NT. And the Microsoft engineers had put the desktop on top of that. And so that begins the beginning phase of our server journey. We start off, there was really no differentiation between the desktop and the client. In fact, my joke is, you took a desktop and you tipped it, it fell over, it's on its side, we said, that's a server. And at the beginning, that was a fine thing to do, because you know, you'd walk up to that machine, and you walk up to a Unix machine, and you see a prompt, and you're like, what do I do with that? Mm-hmm. But you walk up to a Windows box, and you had a GUI, and it was a nice experience, and you'll see how that was very successful for us, very successful. But however, it sowed the seeds of some problems. Okay. Now, in fact, one of the problems was, well, yeah, what is a desktop versus a server, client versus a server? And Mark Arsenovich, not many people know of him, he's an engineer at Microsoft, and Mark became famous by being the guy who pointed out, hey, the only difference between these things is a registry key. So then another great digital engineer, Mark Lukowski, went and changed it. And Mark found that one. And so Mark changed it, Lukowski changed it again. And finally, they did this cat and mouse, and Lukowski said, okay, I just give up. So at the beginning, there was really no distinction between the server and the client in real terms. Okay, so then that starts the next phase of our server journey. Microsoft hired another great digital engineer, Bill Lang. Okay, so Bill Lang came and he said, hey, we need a better server. This thing needs to be a better server. I remember coming to the company, and we had our Friday parties, and I was having a beer with Bill Lang, mm-hmm. and you should have seen the look on his face as he was explaining how he was. Oh, by the way, so he was responsible for the data center edition of Windows Server.
Oh, okay.
So we're at this party, and he's explaining to me how, you know, when you logged in back then, you get this little sound, you know, da-ding or whatever, and that there was a bug in the audio driver of this particular machine, and how Windows data center couldn't boot because there was a bug in an audio driver. And so Bill's head was just exploding. He's like, that's not what we need in a server. And so Bill really started this effort to try and differentiate a server from a client, from a desktop. And that's where he led the effort that became Server Core. So Server Core was, to start off, it was a different thing, right? So you had Server Core, or you had full server. We called it full server. That was actually a bad name. But in the original days of server core, there was a small number of things that supported it. The management wasn't very good. But it was really beginning to draw the distinction and say, hey, this is a server and this is a client. Okay? So then the next phase of our... Recognize that guy? That handsome fellow there?
Okay. I think he's familiar.
So, indeed, I was hired. I was a consulting engineer. Here's a little known fact. So I was a consulting engineer at Digital. Mm-hmm. Two interesting facts. One is I was the shortest lived consulting engineer at Digital Equipment Corporation. What happened was that becoming a consulting engineer takes a really long time. And so what had happened was this was an Digital's declining days, and they were busy selling off businesses, and they sold me to another company, and they said, hey, in 4 weeks, you're going to go join in this other company. You have to. And in the middle of that, 2 weeks into that, I got promoted to consulting engineer. I said, oh, does this mean I get to stay? It's like, no. It just means we're going to get more money for you.
Oh, nice.
Anyway, no. So I was the shortest lived consulting engineer. The other piece of trivia is that Bill Lang was the guy who sold me. So Bill Lang was also the guy who then made me lead architect over Windows, and then lead architect over Windows Server and over System Center. Anyway, so when I came to the company, I said, boy, we really need better management here. And I've been involved in a lot of management activities, did the acquisition that did the mom stuff, did lots of stuff in that space, but I'm most widely known for my invention of PowerShell. Okay? And that now brings us to our next leg of the journey. One of the big challenges we had with Server Core was it wasn't very manageable. So when we got PowerShell on that, fixed the manageability, it became much more viable. And now Server Core really is the foundation of the server. Okay? So now you start off with Server Core and you can build up. Notice we are more clear. We have something called we no longer call it full server because full server sounded like a good thing. Yeah. That wasn't a good thing. Really, it was a server with a client attached to it. And so now what we have is we have Server Core. Lots of roles now run on it. SQL runs on it. Most things run on Server Core. We've got great management. And then you can add server with a GUI, and you can remove the shell and IE to get this minimal server interface, right. Or you can keep in shell and IE for things like remote desktop stuff, stuff like that.
I remember that it was a very subtle difference that when you're doing the installation for media, if you were still doing them manually, you would see that the server core was the default all of a sudden with 2012 and 2012 R2.
Yes.
And I never actually thought about it this way. When I saw the slide for the first time when we chatted about your slides earlier, about server core slipping in as the entire foundation and simply adding on top of that the different pieces, that's obviously a very fundamental shift, but it's missed if you don't actually think of it as a component to be able to put stuff on top of. It makes a lot of sense now.
Absolutely, and you'll see how, coming up, we're going to even be clearer about these distinctions. So that's the next stage of our server journey.
I do have a question that came in from online. Great. From Graham Lierent, specifically about the days at DEC.
Yeah.
And he was basically asking, do you still have the digital torch that DEC gave us when they merged with Compaq?
No, I was gone by then. They sold me off before that.
So there you go, Graham. He did not actually get the torch. It was something else because it was after the fact when he left and became or traded as a commodity, it almost sounded like.
I didn't know you could do that.
I didn't know you were doing that. Okay. So where's the next direction?
So the next, obviously, is the cloud. So at this point, right, so now you get three consulting engineers at Digital, kind of transform things. Wildly successful server, wildly successful. Windows Server, I forget what the current numbers are, but basically somewhere around 74% of all servers that made end up with Windows on them, Windows Server on them. So just an incredibly successful enterprise server. But then the cloud comes to bear. And the cloud, we always mean Azure. We, of course, always mean private and hosted clouds. And there's this new thing, the cloud platform solution. The cloud platform solution is basically cloud in a box, where we articulate what the server hardware should be, we have a fully integrated stack, and then we run that. You know, it's a solution. So just a great thing. And we found that as we took this great enterprise product and moved it to the cloud, we had some challenges. So first thing to point out is that the cloud has just dramatically increased the investments in server. And this is one of the most exciting things, right? So you have this great server, you know, a nice little fire, and then the cloud basically like pours gasoline on it, just adds all this energy. And it's just like, whoa, you know, put your seatbelts on.
I don't know if I want to have the image of burning servers or anything like that.
No, but, okay, well, that's maybe not the best.
Maybe accelerates is better. Well, you know, it's a good way to say it. It works.
It added a just incredible amount of energy and investment.
Right.
So right off the bat, we went and said, hey, system center and server, those can't be separate organizations. Mm-hmm. We really need a coherent set of deliverables. We had joint planning, and we said, hey, when something ships in server, it's got to light up in system center. Now, we're not fully there, not 100%, but we're much better than we were. And things line up very nicely now.
Okay.
The next thing is, you know, we've got Azure, Office 365, and we're running just a ton of services, and these guys now taking Windows Server and running in the cloud are giving direct experiential, you know, feedback to us and set of requirements. So it's one thing to say, oh, you know, we deliver this to customers and we get feedback. It's another thing when you deliver it to the guy in the hallway down the, you know, right down the hallway, and there's a problem. Like, he's at your doorstep.
Right.
Like, fix that.
Kind of like the punching of the wall with Cutler,
exactly.
Right?
I'm going to wait. I want you to fix that. So there's this nice feedback loop. I mean, it's all great, but indeed, this great experiential, you know, input into the server. We're also now doing joint development with Azure. Okay, so there are components that we're working on together. Some of them originated in Azure, and we're working on them together, that are then going to ship in server. So the number of people working on server increases. We're doing internal open sourcing. Now, these are very early days on this, but we're moving to a model where we can internally open source our components. So now, instead of that guy walking down the hallway saying, hey, you know, change it this way, he can like check out the code, change it himself, and say, here, you idiot, here's how to do it.
Okay. I actually wasn't aware of that change in engineering side of things.
Yeah, that's it's
cool.
Coming.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
And then lastly, the big reorganization last year. Now we've got the phone, the Xbox, the client, and the server. We're all contributing to a common kernel and a common stack. Now it turns out, I don't know, maybe people get this, it wasn't obvious to me, but there's an incredible alignment between the interests of the phone and the interests of the server, right? Energy consumption is important to both of us, right? You know, when it's one client, you're not as concerned about energy consumption. Clearly laptops are, but the phone, it's absolutely critical. Well, in a data center, when you have many thousands, hundreds of thousands of servers, energy consumption is important as well. So anyway, there's a great alignment of interest. The net here is, just as I say, there's this increase in, the cloud's brought about an increase investment in the server. So pretty crazy exciting. So when we did this embarking on the cloud, Dave Cutler, again, led the effort. Dave leads the way. He's just an awesome guy. And what he said was, we need a better OS. So when we first did Azure, you might have heard of something called Red Dog. Remember Red Dog? So Red Dog was basically, they looked at Windows Server and they said, hey, this doesn't meet our needs for Azure. And so Dave forked the code and went and built Red Dog, right? His own hypervisor. And at the time, there was a lot of, oh, Windows isn't up to the task. Well, Bill Lang was then put in charge of Azure. And Bill said, no, we need a better server. So he went and said, hey, let's go fix the server. I hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Let's go make those changes in the mainline. And so we did that, and the hypervisor investments, I mean, those guys just took off, did a fantastic job. And all of a sudden, the mainline server exceeded the capabilities of Red Dog. At that point, we retired Red Dog and replaced it with Windows Server. So again, engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came by and said, hey, we need better management, right? The task of management's really changed. So I introduced the idea of the data center abstraction layer, the need for things like desired state configuration, et cetera. Now, all these really kind of teed up to one big thought. And that big thought was, we're all basically saying, we need a server that's optimized for the cloud. Now again, I mentioned we have a fantastic server for the enterprise and will continue. But as you go to the cloud, you need something a little different and you need want to be optimized for the cloud. Okay? So let's talk about that. What are some of the challenges associated with the cloud? So first is the shift from a server to a data center. Go back. Apparently there's a timer. I don't even know how to use PowerPoint. Okay, look at that.
I turned off the timing advances.
What the heck?
We don't have it going far that far.
Stop. Okay, anyway, so the first is a shift away from a server to a data center. And we say data center, we mean a very large number of servers, and that it's not just about the servers. I got to manage the networking devices, the storage, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so we needed this notion of a data center abstraction layer.
Right.
And so we've been focused on that. We have heterogeneous clients, right? And the thing I keep pointing out, by the way, you might see here, Microsoft loves Linux. Here's the thing I want to point out. In the context of Azure, Microsoft makes more money if you have 10 instances of Linux than if you have 2 instances of Windows. Mm-hmm. So being great at Linux, not just, oh yeah, we're going to support Linux. No, no, no. This is not a checkbox item. We're going to be the best place to run Linux. And you see, we're investing in that and doing a great job at it.
Right.
Okay? So we need to support heterogeneous clients. And then there's software-defined everything. And I think Bill Lang says it best when he said, software-defined everything is about taking the magic of software and getting the best computing out of the cheapest stuff.
So doing software-defined compute, software-defined storage, software-defined networking, all those things
gives
you more control over it as opposed to it being on hardware.
Exactly. And you can take it, you can use cheaper hardware.
True.
Yeah.
Very true.
Okay. So then some of the challenges we have in the area of the cloud, and these each one of these could take an hour or so. I'm going to talk about them and then drill into a couple of them. Get out of there, Satya. He's always just jumping in. That guy, we love you, Satya. Just stay out of my presentation. Now, anyway. So first is openness. Okay, we'll drill into that. Again, part bringing up Microsoft loves Linux. Resource consumption. You know, in the area of the cloud, resource consumption's always been important. But when it comes to the cloud, it's absolutely critical. I like to say that, people talk about COGS, right? And it's really kind of hard to get people excited about COGS, right? But here's the flip side of COGS. It's profits, right?
True.
So if you're there and you're saying, hey, here's what I charge, and my COGS are this high, the difference between what you charge and your COGS is your profit. If you can lower your COGS,
you
can increase your profit or decrease your prices.
Right.
So this is really important, resource consumption. Servicing. In the context of Azure, I mean, think about this. You know, Azure, you patch things, right? Patch Tuesday. Now, imagine you have to patch the host. In the context of Azure, if I have to patch the host, with PaaS, there's no drama. That's sort of the model of PaaS.
Right.
You know, things go down, things go up, no drama. It's built into the application model. But in IaaS, when I patch a host, I've got to reboot the host, which then reboots the servers because you don't have live migration in Azure. Mm-hmm. Now, you might then say, okay, but with CPS or Cloud Platform Solution, you do have live migration. And it's true, you do. So there's less drama there. But here's the thing. I did the math. So a fully loaded CPS system can support or tested and support 8,000 VMs.
Right.
So 8,000 VMs, but I just kind of take roughly 2 gigabytes.
Yeah? Okay.
Seem reasonable?
I'm slow on math. Okay, I'm following. I'm good.
Okay.
There's two.
Imagine two of these.
You got it.
Okay. So anyway, 8,000 of these things times 2 gigabytes each means 16 terabytes of data that has to be shuffled around every time you do a patch OS. Now, that's network bandwidth that you really would be rather serving up to your customers.
Sure.
So anyway, so servicing in the context of a cloud is a real challenge for us. And of course, management. You know, it's no longer about managing that machine. It's about managing large numbers. And really, the whole style of management changes when you think about, you know, fully embracing the cloud principles. Mm-hmm. So, Satya, my buddy, one of the reasons I'm so optimistic about the future of servers because I'm so optimistic about the leadership of Satya. And I think, to me, this picture says it all, right? Satya is very much focused on going where the customers are, finding out what they need, and he's just telling us, hey, do what it takes to be successful with the customers. Make sure that they use our products, make sure that they're successful with our products, make sure they love our products. And if you do those things, everything's gonna turn out right. And so, you know, a lot of people, as they go to the cloud, they're using Linux. We're gonna have a great Linux support. Mm-hmm. And it's not just talk. It like flows down at every single level. So I'm just wildly optimistic about
I know that from the Azure perspective, you can go into the gallery and provision machines, and there's a very large number of Linux distributions that are there. And those are all part of a partnership that we've been making with those different vendors that are supporting those.
Yep.
So they're supported, they're there, they're available. And then also Microsoft OpenStack.
Exactly.
Microsoft OpenStack actually is in the main floor of the building that I happen to currently reside here. And I've been talking with the OpenStack guys a lot, and there's some really cool stuff coming for the stuff that they're supporting there too. So very cool. I need to get me one of those buttons.
Yeah, this. You do. Yeah, and actually, you know, what was it? I think a year and a half ago, Microsoft was the largest contributor to the Linux kernel.
Yeah, is all those enlightenments or enhancements and enablements that worked on the hypervisors and other stuff that we were doing.
Exactly, and we didn't stop there. If you actually take a look at the numbers, each year the performance of Linux on hypervisor just keep going up and up and up. And there's more in the pipeline.
Okay.
So it's very exciting stuff.
Very cool.
So let's talk a little bit more about openness. I mentioned this notion of the data center abstraction layer. This was the idea of saying, hey, we need to manage everything in the system, and we want to drive the industry so that people have to instrument things once, and then they can be managed by everybody. So we adopted standards-based management. We took WMI, and we open-sourced it. Open source WMI.
Right.
We had a new implementation of WMI called OMI.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually dramatically smaller and fast.
Okay.
And it's available on Linux, and a number of people have taken that. In fact, a number of network vendors are shipping our instance of OMI in their routers.
Oh, it's like the TopRx switches?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, so that we can manage them with Windows.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the previous version of Windows 2012 R2 ships with commandlets to manage top-of-rack switches.
Mm-hmm.
Very exciting stuff. Then the industry got on this notion of Redfish. So Redfish was an industry consortium to try and replace IPMI with a REST-based system.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked at that, and as with, I don't know if you've looked at REST much, but REST in general tends to be sort of random APIs. And they're great for solving point problems, but it's hard to really be the basis of management with a random API.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead, we engaged with them and said, hey, if you use the OData conventions, so OData is a set of standardized conventions on a REST API. It basically says things like, well, hey, if you're going to refer to an entity, an item, here's how you encode it in the URL. If you want to refer to a collection of those items, here's how you refer to it. If you do sorting, use this name, use this convention. So it's a set of conventions on a REST API. But the point is that those conventions then allow us to build a management layer on top of it. So you can point at a OData API and auto-generate the commandlets. And we engaged with the Redfish Consortium, took this to the DMTF, and now the DMTF has standardized on this approach.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're now going to have, OData-based management of heterogeneous components. So that's very exciting. And then, of course, we have desired state configuration.
Right.
One of the big changes you want to do in a cloud world is instead of saying, make it this way, make it this way, make it this way, or do this, do this, do this, you want to say, here's the way I want the world to be. Make it so.
Right.
So my desired state configuration talks, I talk about the model of Jean-Luc Picard sitting there saying, make it so, and then some poor guy has to go
work. It's a lot easier than the logic of having to do, if it's domain joined, then do this. If it's not domain joined, then go off and do all this following stuff, and then come back and then try it again. It's much easier in the DSC side of the world.
Exactly. Right. Somebody did all that hard work for you, and you just get to say, here's the way I want it to be.
Right.
So we're doing that. Now, when we did desired state configuration, we did it as an open platform.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean? So this is not Microsoft proprietary. We embrace standards-based management.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The agent is an OMI extension agent, or WMI in Windows, OMI extension agent. And we've open-sourced the DSC client for Linux.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we're doing it as a heterogeneous distributed platform. So then on Linux, but on Linux and on Windows, we have a platform play. So there's a very strong API, and then we're working with the open community to get their configuration management products to run on it. So we've got great examples of working with Chef, Didi, Brewmaster, just everybody there. It's a very open platform, and we're having some deep integration. So that's going well. And then Pester. So Pester, it's kind of a small thing, but I think it's an important kind of harbinger of things to come.
I'm not familiar with Pester at all.
You will be in a moment. So Pester, we looked at PowerShell, and as we see more and more people using it to like run everything, I mean, everything. People said, hey, I'd like a little more formalism here. I'd like to be able to unit test my scripts. And so we thought about doing a unit test framework. We have them, of course, ourselves, but it turned out they were very coupled to Microsoft's internal structures and IT. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out the community had went and built one, and they called it Pester. It's a PowerShell unit test framework. And we looked at them and said, hey, this is great. Would you like to work together on it? Because it's great, but it doesn't fully meet our needs. Can we work with you on it? And they said yes. And now get this, right? We looked at this and we said, hey, you know, we think there are other people in the world that have exactly the same problem, right? They are using PowerShell heavily, and they and their customers need a unit test framework, and Pester's probably not quite it. So I reached out to VMware. And because VMware, in the early days of PowerShell, they were like the number one PowerShell community.
Okay.
Now, the other Windows communities have surpassed them by now, but they're still very, very much a PowerShell community. Mm-hmm. Luke Deacons, rock star. Mm-hmm. He's just incredibly active in the PowerShell community. Anyway, their customers have exactly the same problem. They want production scripts, and they want to be able to unit test them. So VMware is working with Microsoft on a joint community project, Pester, to mm-hmm. evolve it to be an open framework. So crazy exciting stuff there. And of course, I mentioned the Linux guest support, and you saw the big announcement, Core CLR mm-hmm. on Linux.
Right.
More great stuff coming in that space. Okay, so now let's talk about a server roadmap. So this tells you, so I've talked about how we got where we are. We have a fantastic product now, Windows Server 2012 R2. If you got stuff, if you're on 2003, man, you wanna get off that. We have a fantastic product right now, 2012 R2. That's what you should be getting on.
Absolutely.
If the application that you need isn't available on there, go beat that vendor up. Like, hey, what do you give him a dope slap? Like McFly, are you not clear on the concept here? Get your code on the best OS, 2012 R2. Now, if it turns out that you can't get that in the time frame you need, fine, go put it on a previous OS. Those are fantastic as well. But then look at use 2012 R2 for your infrastructure, your hypervisor, your storage. I mean, it's just a fantastic OS. Mm-hmm. So it's great. And now I'm going to talk to you about sort of the things going forward. So the first, what you're going to see is deep refactoring. So I mentioned to you, Bill Lang really started this with the separation between the server and the client. Here we're going to get very clear about this. Okay? So what we're going to have is we're going to have a cloud-optimized server, mm-hmm. a server which is deeply refactored for a cloud scenario where you say, hey, here's what I need to do, and I want just the components required to do that and nothing else. Mm-hmm. Then on top of that, we'll build the server. Okay, the server will be the existing server that you have. It'll be compatible with what you have, etc. Okay, but you'll basically have two application profiles. Applications will target the existing set of APIs server or those subset of APIs that are cloud optimized. Next is we're going to be clearer about this. What's a client versus what's a server? Mm-hmm. We've been fuzzy on this. I mentioned to you, we called it full server.
Yep.
That sounded good. It's not good.
It's big. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's big. It means you got to patch it, and you got to service it, and you got to take reboots. So on top of the server, you'll be able to install a client. Guess what? We're going to call it a client. That's what it is. It's fine. If you want to, you can put a client on top of a server. Now, if somebody's trying to sell you a server application, they say, oh, please install a client, you might want to ask them what's going on there. Now, here's the point about where the lack of clarity kind of hurt us. Mm-hmm. It turned out that people who wrote server applications where we weren't clear about what client APIs versus server APIs, they wrote local GUI admin tools.
Right.
And those local GUI admin tools inevitably put a bunch of business logic in the GUI and then called private APIs. And why? And the answer is it was a ton easier. Mm-hmm. But what that meant was then you didn't have formal remote management APIs and you couldn't automate things. So again, when it's like I walk up to this machine and I want to manage it, that difference didn't really matter. But in the context of a modern data center, and especially for a cloud, remote management is non-negotiable. It's non-negotiable.
Right.
Automation, non-negotiable.
Right.
If you're thinking about a product that doesn't have full PowerShell support, full remote management support, you are just making a mistake to purchase that product because it's going to burn you. I mean, it might seem like a good idea, but it's not. So we want to be clear about, hey, you can put a client on top of a server, but server APIs, your server applications should not be taking advantage of that. Now, the one clear example of where this makes sense is to put remote desktop server on top of that, right? So that's clear. The other example is where you want to say local admin tools. We're also then going to talk about containers. You've heard about containers, right. Docker containers right, for Windows. Right, right. Where does that fit in? It fits in here. Mm-hmm. Containers are a compute environment. It's called a compute container. And there'll be kind of two flavors of the compute containers. There'll be a compute container focused in on application compatibility.
Right.
So that will be server running in a container. And then there'll be containers optimized for the cloud. And those containers, you'll have the cloud optimized server. And then lastly, assurance. So assurance basically says we have a recommitment to our security, right? 12 plus years ago, Bill had his famous memo, started a fantastic journey. We're on the second phase of that journey where there's actually a dramatic uptick in our investments in security. And by the way, you're gonna hear, this is the granularity, you're gonna hear the roadmap right now. At Build and Ignite, we're gonna double click in and give you all the details. So boy, you wanna be attending Build and Ignite. Lots of great stuff there. So here are your go-dos, right? This is what people should do. First is buy the right stuff. We've been pretty clear about what the right things to be buying are. So NICs, network interface cards. You know, you should be buying NICs that support RDMA. RDMA is the stuff that lights up SMB3 and gives you fantastic performance. If you're looking to buy a server that doesn't have an RDMA NIC, it's not invest in for the future. The second thing is TPMs. Now this is not quite there yet. Some vendors have it, some don't, but you should be demanding TPMs, these are the trusted platform modules, for your servers. A bunch of our assurance investments going forward are gonna require a TPM on the server. So you're gonna want servers to have TPMs. And then as I mentioned, just don't even consider a product that doesn't have full remote management and PowerShell support. Otherwise, you're not gonna be able to automate things. Next is, you really need to start to reward the right people, okay? So the right people are the folks that, instead of just sitting there, you know, kind of click nexting through a GUI, are the folks that add value to your company through automation and building tools, right? So make yesterday be the last day you ever hire a click next admin, right? Go invest in the right people. And then lastly, join the DevOps revolution. DevOps is the new modern way to think about how to manage IT systems. They just have a wonderful culture, a wonderful way of thinking about things. And you'll see as you invest there, you'll see how it resonates with all the investments we're making. So as I mentioned, you know, the future of server is just incredibly bright. We have fantastic products right now. Go invest in those things. You'll be wildly successful. There's a new wave of things coming, and then a wave after that, and a wave after that. I've just never been more excited about server than I am right now.
They've got the right person for the job for looking after stuff, that's for sure.
And there's my contact information.
I would say, if you've been able to contact, I know that Jeffrey is very active on the Twitters, interacting with people, kind of surprises people sometimes. So if you want to get a hold of him on Twitter after this or during this or whenever, you're able to go ahead and do this by going to, obviously, your favorite Twitter client of choice, and he is @JS. Or Jasonover.
Jasonover.
It's easier to say Jasonover. Jasonover. Or also jasonover.com as well for the website.
Yeah,
if you want to get hold of me for any reason, I'm available at @RicksterCDN. You know, we had a couple of questions come up for people asking about things, even for something as simple as where can you find one of these Channel 9 guys? Do you have a Channel 9 guy yet on your desk?
Yes, I do, actually.
You do? Because I noticed that you had, like, your pyramids that you were talking about on Twitter the other day.
I should have put him on the top.
He needs to be at the very top, crowning pitcher. I'm challenging you to put him on top and then put a pitcher on the net afterwards with Tech Days UK and the hashtags. We can all see it.
It shall happen.
It shall happen. So with that, I'm going to say thank you very much for spending the time with us today. And also thank you as a viewer going on and watching Tech Days over in the UK. I am getting word now that there is some problems with the transatlantic cable. And so to ensure that we don't have any further problems, I'm going to pass this back live from the Channel 9 studios back to Tech Days UK to continue on. Have a great day. Thank you very much for joining us. And thank you.
Yeah. Cheers. And join us at Build and Ignite.